ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय On the board for this morning's verse that we're going to chant is text 31 from Canto 10, chapter 25. And we'll cover three verses, 30, 31, this one that's on the board, and 32. So text 31. Divi Deva Gana Siddhaha Sadhya Gandharva Charana Tushtavur Muchu Mumuchus Tushta Pushpa Varshani Partiva Divi Devagana Siddha Sadhya Gandharva Charana Tushtavur Mumu Chus Tushta Pushpa Varshani Partiva Divi Deva Gana Siddha Sadhya Gandharva Charana Tushtavur Mumuchus Tushta Pushpa Varshani Partiva No? Okay, go ahead. Devi Deva Gana Siddha Sadhya Gandharva Charana Tushtavur Mumuchus Tushta Pushpa Varshani Partiva Sadhya Gandharva Charana Tushtavur Mumuchus Tushta Pushpa Varshani Partiva Divi Deva Gana Siddha Sadhya Gandharva Charana Tushtavur Mumuchus Tushta Pushpa Varshani Partiva Divi In the heavens Deva Gana The demigods Siddha The siddhas Sadhya The sadhyas Gandharva Charana The Gandharvas and Charanas. Tushtavuhu. They recited the Lord's praises. Mumuchuhu. They released. Tushta. Being satisfied. Pushpa Varshani. Downpours of flowers. Partiva, O King Parikshit. And I'm going to go back to text 30 and read then the translations. So starting text 30. Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, Nanda Maharaj, and Balaram, the greatest of the strong, all embraced Krishna, overwhelmed with affection. They offered him their blessings. 31. In the heavens, O King, all the demigods, including the Siddhas, Sadhyas, Gandharvas, Charanas, sang the praises of Lord Krishna and showered down flowers in great satisfaction. Purport. The demigods in heaven were just as jubilant as the residents of Vrindavan, and thus a great universal festival took place. Govardhan Leela is very celebrated. Text 32, my dear Parikshit. The demigods in heaven resoundingly played their conch shells and kettle drums, and the best of the Gandharvas, led by Tumburu, began to sing. So now I'm going to go to the commentaries. It takes a while to gather all these commentaries, but it's very nice just to hear them. Starting with text 30, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, this verse describes more details of interaction with his mother and others. It is not unsuitable to include Balaram in the group of persons with parental rasa because he acts in that capacity as an elder brother. Quote, your question. But if this affectionate brother also holds up the earth in his expansion as Shesha, why did he not show his powers when his younger brother held up Govardhan and help him? Answer. The answer is that when Krishna made his decision to lift Govardhan to stop worship of Indra and begin worship of Govardhan and to protect the inhabitants of Vraja, it would be improper and impossible for his Angsa, Balaram, to do anything else. Thus, Balaram did not show his powers. As Krishna is the Shaktiman, holder of all powers, by his desire alone, suitable powers will make their appearance in his Angsa. Meaning, Balaram will do whatever Krishna wants, and Krishna wants, he'll do. And if Krishna doesn't want, he won't do. So he's following the lead of Krishna. In succeeding verses also, this conclusion is mentioned. In that area, sometimes, the ancient depiction is seen of Yashoda and Rohini offering butter to Krishna to eat, while Krishna's father and brother hold Govardhan on their heads. This is out of excitement due to their affection. Vishwanath. In this verse, they are described as being excited and confused by their affection. And elsewhere he writes like this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Balaram is included in this group because he's older. Then again, questions may arise. Why did Balaram not expand as Sheshanag and lift the hill? The point is that Krishna had personally vowed to do this, and it would have been unfitting for an expansion to carry out the stated intention of Krishna himself. Same Achari with two different snapshots of the Leela. Jiva Goswami. The verse describes his meeting with his mother and others who were more affectionate to him than the other cowherds and women and were situated behind. Rohini's name is mentioned before Nanda's name, since Nanda gave her great respect, and she was the assistant of Yashoda. Balaram is called the best of the strong because, though he could have lifted Govardhan also, since he holds the earth on his hands with ease, in his expansion named Shesha, he was not included to do so because Krishna desired to perform this pastime. The phrase can indicate that he embraced Krishna with great intensity, agreeing with Krishna's desire. He remained silent because of his great affection, his great strength, and his knowledge. In order to assist in glorifying Krishna as the lifter of Govardhan, he was not mentioned previously in this pastime. Yashoda, Rohini, and Nanda blessed him, saying, quote, protect us always, be happy always, and attain all your desires at all times. They were bewildered because of their affection. In old drawings of lifting Govardhan, it is sometimes seen that the elder women offer him butter to eat, and his father and uncles support Govardhan with their heads. In this way, they become confused by their affection. Nice. And then this morning's verse, text 31, Vishwanath, short one sentence commentary. Just as the inhabitants of Braja were full of bliss, so the devatas were also overjoyed. The demigods in heaven, yes, same, were just as jubilant as the Vrijavasis, and thus a great universal festival took place. Jiva Goswami writes, not only the people of Vraja became joyful, but the inhabitants of heaven also celebrated. This is described in two verses. Quote, question. Since Indra suffered broken pride, why did they act in this way? Answer. They were satisfied and joyful in seeing the sweet pastime of Krishna and the destruction of Indra's pride, which made him commit a criminal act. Shukadeva Goswami calls out to Parikshit in astonishment, since the devatas rejoiced even though their king had suffered. Just as one properly ignores the governor in defense of the king, so the devatas properly ignored Indra in deference to the Supreme Lord. Oh, Parikshit, this is known to you. It should be understood that Indra was not angry by having his pride destroyed. And then the verse 32, Jiva Goswami, is very brief. The instruments were played skillfully and amazingly prachodita by the devatas. The musicians were inspired by the dancing and singing. Divi is mentioned twice to indicate that the devas in heaven were not afraid of Indra. By acting in this way, Shukadeva calls to Parikshit out of bliss to indicate that the king also celebrates in this way. And the devatas skillfully composed songs at that moment. So obviously, with the Govardhan Leela, the celebrated pastime is now being disclosed. The experience, the impression that the Leela has made on the hearts of different Vrijavasis and different denizens of the higher regions, because Raso Vaisaha Krishna is the source of all rasa, and he is enjoying, stimulating their love for him. And their love for him is stimulated, and they respond in very specific ways. They're giving blessings. The elders, those who are elder to him. That's what elders do in Vedic culture. They give blessings, especially where blessings are deserving. And there, it's a little interesting, or a little odd maybe. They just witnessed something extraordinary, supernatural. And the very person who has powers that are supernatural, they're giving blessings to. It speaks to their culture, it speaks to their understand, how they view what Krishna just did. They're not appreciating his majesty as much as they're appreciating the sweetness. And they're true to their rasas. It's a parental rasa, this first verse. It's a parental rasa verse. So what do parents do when they see something wonderful done by, or the elder brother, or those who are elder in a relationship? How do they behave when somebody who's junior to them, or subordinate, or a youth or something, they do something wonderful? In this case, it's something wonderful that they couldn't do, but they give the blessings. It's a cultural, and it's a rasa. We were discussing this a little bit with relation to Ram's Leela also. These two things simultaneously, establishing dharma and reciprocating rasa. This came out in Hanuman's prayers to Ram, found in the fifth canto. And Jiva Goswami takes that section, and it appears in his Priti Sandarbha. So Priti, that's the love, prema, that's the section of the Sandarbhas that's the mature stage of bhakti. So that's Hanuman, and it fits in the Priti Sandarbha section, and he speaks a lot about the rasa that's existing between the two, Hanuman and Ram. And then Ram and others, and Hanuman is appreciating the rasa that's exchanged between Ram and others, Sita and Lakshman and so forth. But all the while upholding dharma, and all the while stimulating rasa. And showing his divinity or supremacy above everybody. So the residents of Braja are appreciated by the demigods as most exalted. It appears many times in the Bhagavatam. One section of the Bhagavatam specifically my thoughts are going to is Brahma, in the Brahma Vimohan Leela, in his prayers. And in several places in his prayers, he's recognizing the super exalted position, the good fortune that he and others in the heavenly regions don't have access to, that good fortune of the residents of Braja. But by observing and experiencing the joy of the residents of Vrindavan, they get some sense of the joy of their experience. Although it's not their experience. Brahma speaks like that about the super excellent position of the residents of Vrindavan. He says, you reciprocated with Putana by giving her a position as an assistant to Mother Jashoda in the spiritual world, how is it possible that you're going to reciprocate with the love of the residents of Vrindavan? And Vishwanath writes in his commentary that says he can't. Or Krishna says, all I can do is, you know, your love for me is, that's the gift I can give to you. And there's nothing that I can give beyond that. It's the supermost exalted position of the love of the resident of Vrindavan. And so the elders in the first of the three verses being described, and then the next two verses is the devas. And not only the devas, but also the siddhas, charanas, gandharvas, and apsaras. So just a little bit about Vedic cosmology. They're not in Swarga. They're in Bhuvar Loka. Vidyadharas, charanas, siddhas, sadhyas, apsaras, gandharvas. They're in this region below Swarga. They have function to assist the residents of the heavenly realm, but they have another realm. So that's a detail. But you know, they're present, and how do they know what's going on? What's going on Earth? Because they're up there. So they have capacity of knowing things that beyond our sense of capacity to knowing things. Not only, for example, again and again, Prabhupada would repeat that those in Siddha Loka, they can travel anywhere without an airplane. That's a mystic perfection. That's a siddhi, and they can travel anywhere. And we don't find the example of demigods coming to earth in Kali Yuga. Sariputta describes like this. And he uses language very familiar to us with this coronavirus situation. They quarantined the earthly realm because people are too toxic in Kali Yuga. So we don't hear of the siddhas and charanas and devas and so forth. But, you know, in the previous yuga, at the end of the previous yuga, here comes Indra, here comes Brahma. And is it like storybook? Is Shukadev Goswami interested in fiction? So they came. And just yesterday, in describing some topics on Ravana, when he was traveling around in his Pushpaka Vimana, conquering, his plan was to personally confront everyone in the leaders in the universe, from Patala Loka. And they, Yamaraj and the Nagas and so forth, all the way up to the top. No, except Brahma, because he got benedictions. He saw Brahma in a special position, but somehow he didn't wrap his mind around the fact that he's got his powers from Brahma. But, you know, the devas and everybody else, like, conquer them all. So one of the persons he came to challenge was King Maruta. And King Maruta was in the midst of performing a sacrifice. And when the sacrifice was being performed, the devas who were being propitiated by the sacrifice were right there. And when they saw Ravana coming in for a landing with this pushpaka vimana, they disappeared. It gives some details where they went, but they were afraid of him, and they knew that they couldn't do anything in relation to him because of Brahma's boon, so he just like, zoop, they went. And then after, there's some interesting things that happened. Marut was advised, Maruta, I think that was his name. He was advised by his Purohit, the priest that was doing the yajna, two things. Don't stop the yajna. Once you start the yajna, if you stop the yajna, your whole dynasty and all your subordinates, they'll all be destroyed because we're propitiating Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva won't like it. So don't stop. Continue the yajna. And besides, if you want to fight, he has this benediction from Brahma, you'll lose. So don't pick a fight when you're going to lose. Continue the yajna. And then when the yajna was completed, so he was satisfied, Ravana went away saying, you know, I'm victorious. I gave him this option, fight me or accept you're defeated by me. So he continued with the yajna. I defeated him and he left. And when he left, the devatas came back. So that's in the previous yuga before. So Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, but no visitation during Kali Yuga because it's quarantined. Quality is so bad. And it's not getting better. So, within our experience, what's our experience of devas? So, there is a tendency, natural, conditioned soul tendency, to look at things from the lens of our experience. It's not surprising. It's quite normal. But our experience is quite restricted. It's even more so restricted in Kali Yuga than in previous yugas and so on. But even just being on earth, those who are born on earth, even during these periods, they don't have the capacity. The consciousness on earth is less than Bhuvar, Swarga, what to speak of the other. Consciousness is less. So, because consciousness is less, the experience of perception is less. There's still senses, but senses aren't perceiving because of being covered by the influences of Kali. And so, it's put those two things together, conscious awareness or conscious experience on the level of consciousness through the senses being way down here and so forth. The those who are in the should-be, would-be Brahmana position, they're now scientists and philosophers that have a mechanistic view, and there's no, everything is in terms of matter. So, you know, they're like trying to find out, is there a mind and is there consciousness? That's not very elevated from the Vedic paradigm. So the picture of the world is very different. And from our sense perception, it certainly looks real. That's how it registers in the mind and the intelligence and consciousness, because it's covered. And then along over here comes this other paradigm. That's a higher consciousness paradigm. So the devas doesn't give the, all not just here but elsewhere. How did they know stuff that was going on here on earth? You know, maybe somebody was there sending them a spy report or something. Or maybe they just have consciousness capacity. I don't know of any explanation that says how they know. But how do they know to do things like help with digestion, or blink, as Prabhupada would say. Without the sanction of a demigod, you can't even blink your eyelid. That's an involuntary act, but it happens. So it can be explained in mechanistic terms, in terms of blah, 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 blah. Or another paradigm is, it can be explained in terms of the controlling demigods. And it's not even that one cancels out the other, but how does the blinking eyelid thing happen besides, well, it's just, you give a mechanistic explanation. If that's your paradigm, if that's your standard of consciousness, everything can be, so that's an atheistic view. It doesn't mean zero, trash it. It just means the understanding is very limited and incomplete. And there's a higher consciousness understanding and a higher consciousness understanding. So like this commentary here, this word divi appears in text 31, it appears in text 32, and the explanation we're given. Why is that? Because the demigods are recognizing their authority. They're in the demigod position. And they're recognizing Indra goofed up. They're not like vilifying him, but they're offering praise to the Lord of the demigods. That's what the demigods do, and that's what they're doing. They're not insulting Indra. They're doing what demigods should be doing. So, their position is a higher consciousness position. They're not yet at the standard of Brijbasis, or they're not at the standard of Vaikunthavasis, they're not at the standard of Shuddha Bhakti. But they're exalted personalities, and then there's personalities above those exalted personalities that are still within the universe. And then there's the Brijbasis. And they're within the universe, it appears, but their consciousness is special. And the commentary also indicates the certain amongst them, not just those who are elders, but certain amongst them, their names are mentioned because their intimacy with Krishna is superlative. It's not to say those that aren't in that position, their love for Krishna is inferior. That's the material way of looking at things, but it's not, we shouldn't make that mistake, because it's offensive. They're perfect souls, and there's more perfect, most perfect. That's how our acharyas help us. So we're being introduced to the most perfect souls, the Brijbasis, and the siddhas and charanas and devas, and the regions above earth, they're also celebrating, they're having a big festival, the Govardhan Leela festival. They're understanding and appreciating the unique reciprocation that Krishna is providing for the residents of Vrindavan, and giving them the conscious experience, although flying in the sky, observing it. So it's one thing to observe it, and it's another thing to participate in it. One last thing. In Jiva Goswami's commentary on Brahma Samhita, he explains there are stages that mantra meditation specifically, mantra upasana is the term. One may, by mantra upasana, one may see in one's mind, or have revealed in one's mind, the details of a pastime of Krishna. Kind of like a snapshot. Like paintings. show the artist's depiction of a pastime. And it's derived from a mantra or a text from the Vedas that's describing a pastime of Krishna. And by meditating on that sound, through sound, one can experience the pastime. You can see the pastime. You're the observer of the pastime. And then further is one not can only can see and be present in the pastime, but one can enter into the pastimes through sound. That is, spiritual sound can carry one to the spiritual realm, above the upper regions of the material realm, above the position of the devas, for example, where they can see but not exactly participate. But they participate in their own way by singing praises and beating kettle drums, and they're very expert at composing music and verses and dancing and celebrating. They're having a festival, like we have festivals. We're earthlings, not siddhas and charanas and gandharvas and devas. We can have festivals, and we should. And by doing that, it specifically, the sound vibration has potencies to carry us to directly experience the pastime of Krishna's appearance or Krishna's lifting of Govardhana. We're not there because our consciousness is covered, but the potency is there. And the sound vibration can carry one to that position. That's the Vedic paradigm. Sound, everything is in sound. The material and spiritual experience is moved by sound. It's manifest by sound for our conscious experience. So somehow we're very fortunate. By our founder Acharya's mercy, we have these Srimad Bhagavatam texts and the Bhaktivedanta purports, and now another door opens, and here comes some other commentaries by our elevated acharyas. It's a sound bath, like kirtan is a sound bath, or japa is a sound bath. Cleansing. We have a lot of cleansing to do, but the potency is there. We're in the right place, hearing this sacred sound vibration. See if there's some discussion.
Maharaj, I have two questions.
You have your what?
Two questions. Both are from the commentary. So there was this analogy of the governor and the king in one of the commentaries from, I think, the verse 31 or 30, I think. It spoke about how in the defense of the king, the governor can be overruled or something like that. Can you explain the analogy one more time?
Could you say again what the commentary said slowly?
Yeah, I think the commentary said that sometimes the governor can be overruled in defense of the king. There's an analogy.
Okay, there's a king. Okay, sure, I got it. There's a king, and the king has people that assist the king. So the translation is using the word governor. He's under the king. So other governors, they're accountable to the king. So they're not disrespecting another governor if they're honoring the king. Mm. Is that clear?
Yeah.
They're not, you know, Indra got his, so not doing that. They're doing what governors do. They honor the king. Okay. Do you have a second question?
Again, in the commentary, there is I think it is Jiva Goswami who is speaking. Jiva Goswami.
Jiva Goswami, okay.
So he's talking about the residents of Vrindavan being excited and confused. So what is the confusion about?
Well, in principle, sometimes we become so... Let's take, you know, the situation with Dhruva, because we covered that recently. Yeah. When he was touched by the conch shell of Lord Vishnu, he was certainly excited, but he was also confused. Like, I want to glorify, but I don't know how to properly glorify. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the conch shell touched, seeing what he saw. So, we may, it can work in both directions. In sadness, become confused, or in joy, become so joyful, we're kind of confused. What should I do? What's appropriate? And we lose sense of social proprieties. They became confused. I mean, they just saw Krishna do something that was like fantastic. Now, how do they properly extend themselves to he who just did this super fantastic thing?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anything else? Online?
I have a question.
Okay.
Maharaj, this is regarding the Swarasiki process you...
Regarding what?
The Swarasiki process you explained.
Ah.
Is there more details about it?
It's just a principle, not details. It's a very elevated state of consciousness. Jiva Goswami goes on to say, even today there are persons that have this capacity, meaning some of the Goswamis. But, you know, capacity is a matter of consciousness and fixing the mind even for those that have the capacity. Okay? Yes. Raktak, why don't you stand up and go get the microphone?
Hare Krishna. Are the gods of Greek mythology, are they bona fide, one and same with the demigods of Krishna?
Let me respond to your question in a different way. My understanding of the Greeks and the authors of Greek mythology, they previously received that understanding from the Vedas, and then they, you know, over a period of time, it became distorted and a little different. But they were, at least historically, ancient over periods of however long, centuries. There were wise people who were in touch with the Vedas, and then the Greek writers wrote according to, you know, kind of a creative writing. Here's something that Bhaktivinoda Thakur expressed, one of his essays after reading the Bhagavatam, is celebrated literature, epic literature of any culture is simply derived from scripture. So there's the answer to your question. It's derived from scripture, but the distorted picture of that scripture according to the local culture at that time. Okay.
Thank you.
Prabhupada ki jai.